Hi, I'm David Fettis, and this logic talk is about constructing proofs, again based on the work of Dr. Matthew Van Cleve. We've seen that there are 8 valid forms of inference when constructing proofs, and it's very important to memorize or internalize these: modus ponens, modus tollens, hypothetical syllogism, simplification, conjunction, disjunctive syllogism, addition, constructive dilemma. If you don't know what these are, if you haven't already memorized them and worked on them some, you might as well just hit the stop on this video right now and go back and study them some more. We're going to use these 8 valid forms of inference to construct some proofs. Proofs derive the conclusion from the given premises, and they do that using only the 8 valid forms of inference. Now, you have 8 valid forms available to you, but not every proof has to use every one of those 8 rules. You can use any of the 8 rules as you move along, and you can use a strategy where you're kind of working your way backwards or working your way forwards in order to get a proof. We'll see a little bit more of how that works. First of all, let's look at working backward. What rule can we use to derive the sentence that we need to derive? So, working backward means you look at the conclusion, and then you try to kind of think backward. How would I get to that conclusion? Here's an example. Premise number 1, R and S. Premise number 2, T is true. Therefore, T or L and R and S. Now, how do we work on that? Well, the conclusion of that proof is, or it's not a proof yet, but the conclusion of that argument is a conjunction. And before we prove it, we just want to realize it is a conjunction. And what rule leads to a conjunction or yields a conjunction? In this case, it's the rule that we call conjunction. If P is true in one premise and Q is true as another premise, then we can say P and Q is true. So using that, we say the rule of conjunction combines two conjuncts on separate lines. And so R and S is on a line as premise 1, and we'll need to get T or L on its own line. So when you look at the conclusion you're trying to get, R and S is already there. And it's a conjunct with T or L. So we've got R and S, we need to get T and L somehow on its own line in order to reach a conclusion with that conjunct of the two statements. What rule yields a disjunction? Because T or L is a disjunction. How do we get a disjunction? Well, you can do it using constructive dilemma, or you can do it using addition. And in this case, it can't be a constructive dilemma if there's no conditional, and there's no conditional in any of those. So we've got to use addition in order to get there. And addition, remember, is if you have a statement P and it's true, then P or any Q will be true, because any disjunction is true as long as one member of it's true. So we use disjunction in this case. Addition can disjoin any statement to an existing statement. So we've got premise 2, it's T. So we disjoin L to it. T or L is true since T is true. If T is true, then T or L has got to be true. We're using addition to line 2, and we get T or L. And we now have each conjunct of the conclusion. See what the conclusion was supposed to be, T or L, and R and S. We have each conjunct of that conclusion on separate lines. Line 1 has the R and S part. Line 3 has the T or L part, and all we got to do is conjoin them using conjunction. So you write down T or L and R and S, and you write conjunction of 1, 3. Those two lines were conjoined to give you line 4. And what is line 4? Line 4 is the conclusion you were supposed to prove. So you have now a completed proof. Now, working forward is a little different strategy. With working backward, if the conclusion to be proved is a complex proposition, if it contains truth-functional connectives, then working backward is a good strategy. However, if the conclusion to be proved is an atomic statement, then working forward is often a better strategy. And working forward, you're just kind of fishing around a little bit. What rules can we apply to the existing premises to at least come up with something to derive something. And maybe the something that we derive will turn out to be something that gets us toward that atomic statement that we're trying to prove. So here's an example. A and B. B implies C, therefore C. Now we look at that, at those two premises, and we see that the conclusion C is atomic, so we can't work backward. You work backward when you have a complex proposition. You work forward if you have an atomic proposition as your conclusion. So we look at, we see there's a C, we're going to have to work forward. Now, in working forward, the easiest thing in all of logic is to look at a conjunction and break it apart. You've got A and B. You can break that apart using simplification. Remember the rule of simplification. It's if you have P and Q as a premise, therefore P, and also therefore Q. You can just simplify and say that one is true on another line and Q is true on the other line. So, and we look at it, we break apart that conjunction A and B by using simplification, and so that gives us line 3, A, simplification of line 1. 4 is B, simplification of line 1. You just took the two parts of that conjunct and put them on separate lines as being true. Now, what lines can we apply to derive something or other? That's the question we ask. We look at what we have so far, A and B. B entails C. And we also have the line A is true and B is true. But now, when you see that B is true, and you also see that B entails C, you've got something you can work with. Line 2 is a conditional, and line 4, B, is the antecedent of that conditional in number 2. And so when you have a conditional and its antecedent, what do? You think modus ponens. P entails Q, and P is true, so therefore Q is true. And you apply that in this case. Line 4 is the antecedent of line 2. B is true, and B implies C or entails C. So therefore, C is true by modus ponens using lines 2 and 4. But now you're done because you just proved C. Remember, therefore C was what we were trying to prove. And so you have a completed proof starting with those two premises and now going through a couple of extra steps, yielding that C is proved to be true. Well, let's try a longer proof. And as I get into the longer proof, just a word of sympathy and warning. Some people find that this is not their thing. They don't have a great knack for abstract ideas or abstract methods of logic. Others find it really something that they're very good at. When I was studying philosophy and getting into these kinds of things, symbolic logic was actually the course I did better in than any other course I ever took. I did well in courses, but I was literally perfect in symbolic logic because when you get this stuff right, you know it's right. You proved it, and so you get it all right. And for some of you, you might get it all right, or you might get almost nothing right because this method of arguing is very hard for you. When I first studied symbolic logic, I was also in the process of having studied some advanced mathematics and doing some computer science and high-level programming courses. And so if you're somebody who's really wired for math and for programming, then this kind of logic would come pretty easily to you. Now I'm out of that kind of stuff. I've gotten into ministry and preaching, and some of you may be more into ministry, preaching, other kinds of things that didn't have a lot to do with math and computer programming, and so this kind of logic may be a challenge. Just a word to you, don't give up, don't throw up your hands. You've come this far in the course, you don't want to quit now. We'll make the quizzes something that are probably passable, even if you struggle with this stuff. Just try to remember it in the big picture. There's a lot of different ideas of logic, a lot of different kinds of fallacies, things with inductive logic, now with proofs. In the total big picture of studying this course, you're going to learn some things that have helped you to be a better and clearer thinker. So if it's not your thing, don't get discouraged. If it is your thing, well, enjoy it and take it step by step. Let's look at this longer proof now with five premises. First premise, not A or B, entails L. Second premise, not B. Third premise, A entails B. Fourth premise, L entails not R or D. And the fifth premise, not D and R or F. And the thing to be proved is therefore L or G and not R. So let's just dive into that and we'll think about how we can get it done. You've got your five premises, and we're going to start with the easiest thing you can do in logic. If you have a conjunction, just break it down using simplification. Premise five is not D and R or F. So let's just say not D, simplification of five. And R or F, again, a simplification of line five. Now what do we have? Well, lines two and six are negated atomic propositions, not B and not D. And when you see a negated atomic proposition, then you start thinking, well, we see those sometimes when you're using the rule of modus tollens or disjunctive syllogism. That often will give you some results if you have the negation of a proposition. So what can we derive? We look at modus tollens, P entails Q, and if you have not Q, therefore you know not P. So let's see where that gets us in this particular attempt at a proof. We see line 2 is not B, and we see line 3 is A entails B. So, by modus tollens, you know not A, because the consequent of line 3 is B, but premise 2 is not B, and therefore not A by modus tollens using lines 2 and 3. Well, now what? We've got our next step is there anywhere that not A can be used to help? Because again, that's a negated atomic proposition. Is it any use anywhere? Well, we notice that in line one, not A is in a disjunction with B. And you can always, once you know something is true, as we know from line eight that not A is true, now we can say that not A or B is true by addition. Because if not A is true, then not A or anything else is true. So therefore, we can say not A or B is true. And we want to say not A or B is true because we see that it's appearing in line one as a disjunct that would lead to a different conclusion. And so it's something we can use to come up with other ideas and other conclusions. So we've got 9, and then we move on to 10. We know that L is true because in line 9 we said not A or B is true, and since line 1 says that not A or B entails L, if not A or B, then L, we can say that L is true by modus ponens using lines 9 and 1. Well, we're looking at our conclusion for a moment. And our conclusion is a conjunction of L or G and not R. L or G is a conjunct that we need in our conclusion, and we know that L is true from line 10, so now by addition, because L is true, L or anything else is true, so we can say that L or G is true by simple addition using line 10. So now we have one side of the conjunct that we need for the conclusion, L or G has been proven. Now we need to come up with not R. Not R is the other conjunct that we need for the conclusion that we're trying to prove. And let's look around for a not R somewhere. Line 4 has a not R in it. And line 4 has that as part of its consequent, not R or D. So what can we do with that fact? Well, not R or D is something that we can get at by modus ponens, because remember, if we look at line 4, it says L entails not R or D, but line 10 says L. So if L is true, then not R or D has to be true because line 4 says that L entails not R or D. So now we know by modus ponens from lines 4 and 10 that not R and D is true. Next step, how do we show that not R is true? Because remember, in the conclusion, not R is the second part of the conjunct that we're trying to prove. How do we show that not R is true? Well, let's do it by disjunctive syllogism, because you notice in line 12 we have not R or D. Disjunctive syllogism says that if you have P or Q, and you know that P isn't true, if you know not P, therefore Q's got to be true. So if you have a disjunction, and you know that one side of the disjunction is a negation, then you know that the other side is true. And when we apply that, we see that not R or D is true on line 12, but we see on line 6 that not D is true. You see that? So you have the disjunct, not R or D, but if D isn't true, because we have a negation of D being true, then we know that not R is true by disjunctive syllogism using lines 6 and 12. Now what do we have? Well, in line 13, we have not R, which is the second half of the disjunct we were trying to prove. In line 11, we have L or G, which is the first part of the conjunction we were trying to prove. And so, in order to get that conjunction, we just take line 11, L or G, and line 13, not R. We can join them using the raised dot, and we have L or G and not R using the conjunction of lines 11 and 13. And you're done. The lines here that are shown in yellow are the lines that were added using the various valid forms of inference based on the original premises that we got. And you'll notice that line 14, L or G and not R, is exactly the same as the line that we were originally trying to prove using those five premises that were given to us. Let me again say that if you learn this, and if you were to move into a course in symbolic logic, then you would have to develop this much more as you use these eight forms of inference and as you do a lot of proofs. In this course, you're only going to be doing a few proofs. You're going to be getting the hang of it, I hope, a little bit, but we're not concentrating on it hugely. We're trying to learn a lot of different elements of logic in this course. So do your best in this week of the eight valid forms of inference and constructing proofs. If you survive, great. If this week is a struggle for you, there's other weeks where your quiz scores will help your final grade even out pretty well. So you're going to have a number of proofs to work on as exercises, and you'll be given those proofs in advance. You won't be under the clock ticking as you have the quiz. There will be a separate file that's presented with the proofs that you're supposed to do. You can work on those for a while. And then you'll take the quiz, which will ask some questions about the proofs that you were working on. So again, this is the thing, I hate to say it because some of you will be very mad at me, this is the thing that I'm better at than almost anything else in all of academia, and it is the hardest thing to teach, because it's something that a lot of people just struggle with and don't have a knack for, and others just get it. It's okay if you don't get it. Try your best. Keep learning. And remember what we started this course with. One of the talks was, think humbler. If you try to do proofs and it's not working, you may be tempted to say, this is so stupid and the people who came up with this are so stupid. Well, maybe so, but it might be just a little hint that there are some forms of thinking, of logic, of reasoning that I'm not so good at, or at least so well trained in. And if nothing else, if I don't get better at logic, just get a little better at humility. Well, God bless you as you try to learn these things, and God bless you as you seek to think clearer, think harder, as you become more and more a person who understands and communicates God's truth.